will tell you right today that really knows the river that it isn't catching the fish out that's created our problem. It is pollution that has eliminated the fish from spawning. Sure. It is man-made obstacles that have been created to keep them from going to a predestined spawning area. It is boats and motors running up and down a tributary that creates a large amount of residue that fish cannot live in. They just cannot live in it. And again, I spoke earlier about the man-made, the pollutions that that we have other than that, like normal sewage running. We have houses right here and fish camps that's right on this river that empties raw sewage into the river.
Yeah. You see, what I've been doing is I've been talking to a lot of different people around, and what I hear from a lot of different experienced fishermen, the same things, and I think that's probably true, and almost everyone I've talked to has said the same thing about the river and its decline in fertility, as you have said today.
The reversal of it is coming late on that, with our water management board. They may have a status quo on the river for the future, but they will never get back to what it was before. So you could forget that and start the day of controlled pollution. Control growth near the water, but back from the water as far as 10, 15, and 20 miles where you have uncontrolled
agricultural
problems. Now, like Hastings.
I was over there yesterday.
All of our surface runoff to the river is from all of this area.
And that's insecticides and herbicides and fertilizers.
I could go on for hours about it. You see, I knew that this river was coming to this stage, and that's the reason I didn't fish. I quit.
Yeah.
I quit a long time ago, and I gave the river 10 years before fishing would be gone. I gave it 20 years before commercial fishing would be eliminated completely. Well, I was wrong. They still commercial fish, and my 20 years is up now, or very near it being up. I said, you will not have this kind of stuff. 40 years ago, I knew that we were dying.
Yeah.
When we would go out one winter and catch 500,000 pounds of herring and shad, and then keep a record of it, of daily catches, or yearly catches, it wouldn't take you long to say, my God, where are they gone? They're not here this year.
Yeah.
Then we have these people that come along with the philosophy that it's a 7-year cycle on fish. Well, I can come up with a 7-year itch. I can come up with a 7-year anything. But that's not being realistic. Your decline is caused by things that are obvious if you really sit down and think about it. It has to be pollution. Now, there is no other reason for it.
Sure.
So, what do you do when you have a pollution problem? You go and talk to the powers that be, and they slough it off. Oh, we got a pollution problem. What are we going to do about it? We'll stock it. Stocking it, hell, you're defeating your purpose. Clean up. Work on environmental control of the surrounding area rather than stocking it for a fish that won't survive in the first place.
So is the opposition to that, because they say that pollution control would be anti-growth, is that what people are saying?
Generally speaking. Yeah. Generally speaking, that whenever you, the people that move in here and the fathers of the county or elected or whatever, have to produce something for the county or or build something for the county that would resemble growth. Mm-hmm. But they don't stop to think that the controlling of growth is the most important. And if you're going to have growth, then you've got to open up your arteries other than the river. You've got to build roads. That's primarily the number one thing. You've got to construct a network of roads to have controlled growth. Because if you don't, you're going to have the runoff right on. Dirt roads is not going to be your answer. You create the problem as you go along. Oh, well, that's neither here, that's another story.
Yeah, I told you to get started.
The area itself, as far as fishing is concerned, was beautiful when I was a kid.
Yeah, in the 30s.
But everybody in any area, up north or southwest or wherever you go, will always talk about how good it was when he was a kid, or back 40 or 50 years ago, mm-hmm. or 60 years ago. Generally speaking, it's true.
Yeah.
And then we create our own problem. We bog ourselves in our own mire. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it. Fishing on this river with 2 or 3 hook nets, 400 or 500 hooks was beautiful. A way of life was killing a couple of ducks or going out and killing a deer. None regulated.
Yeah.
Area, individual regulations. Why kill 3 deer when 1 will suffice? Why catch little fish when you couldn't eat little fish? You couldn't sell little fish. People realized this and they didn't do it. There was no sense in doing it. Why go and kill 100 ducks? Like these people go on safaris for killing quail, for killing ducks, for these clubs that go out and shoot.
And ducks were a big sport down here?
Well, they became a big sport. When I was growing up, of course, it wasn't a big sport.
Okay. But the people who were from the north were down here vacationing.
Sure,
they'd
come down and started hunting
ducks.
And we're back to population. Population explosion eliminates wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminates it to the extent that it moves somewhere else where there isn't any population. There's abundance of wildlife, but it's eliminated from this area. Not because we killed it out, because wildlife has got sense enough not to live around it. They are afraid of it. Same thing with fish. Fish will not live where you got boats and motors running around it all the time, or a boat ramp when they're unloading and offloading. But they'll go around into a cove, there's nothing there. And there's abundance of fish. The fish are here, the game is here, the wildlife is here, the ducks and everything are here, but they're moved away mm-hmm. from the populated areas.
Yeah.
And of course, the minute that we got these populated areas, we've got pollution. And we got pollution, we've been eliminated from what we call nature's gift to mankind. As simple as that.
Yeah.
It was beautiful once. It will never be beautiful again. Unless you look at a high-rise condominium as being beautiful. People come down here and go to a condominium. I'm not against condominium. But that is part of growth. And if you're going to have growth, let's have controlled growth. Let's put them all in one place. Let's put every damn Yankee in one spot. Let's regulate our sewage and our, and you know, you follow what I'm trying to say.
Andy plans 10 years ahead. He don't plan just for today. He plans.
I look so far ahead. It ain't funny. When I was mayor of Willacka, I'm looking 5 and 10 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted a central water supply in Willacka.
I fought
for it. Got a grant of $500,000. $243,000 as a loan at 5% with 40 years to pay it back, and the town of Willacka turned it back.
Mm.
That took me a year to get it. But I wanted a central water system. The pollution factor in this area will allow septic systems. But it will not permit drinking water to come out of the same level that you have a sewage system.
Good thing.
And so I said, why worry about septic tanks at this particular stage of the game? It's already, the ground is already polluted. Later on, we'll get to that. But first, you've got to have a supply of water. You don't put sewage in with no water. You put water in, and then you wait a reasonable amount of time, and then bring into your sewage system to eliminate your pollution for the water area, for the river. I tried to explain to them that controlled water is the most important thing in this area. That if we could get a good supply of water, and we're so fortunate to have the Hawthorne Aquifer pass within 5 miles of us. In fact, the matter is, it's less than 5 miles, about 3 miles. The Hawthorne Aquifer makes a trip around and comes down by Pomona, between Pomona and Malacca. Well, this is a supply of water that will last this area for billions and billions of years. If we were so concerned and so worried about a supply of water, we have an abundance of water coming right out of the ground in natural springs, right. Artesian wells. There is more ways than one to tap water in this particular area and then purify this water, make it good drinkable water and healthy water for everybody, and at a reasonable rate. I advocated that we could do it at $9.50 per household if it was a mandatory hookup for everybody in the city of Willacre. And then we could become a focal point for the surrounding area to sell water if they wanted it. Of course, Willacre couldn't buy that because of the word mandatory. But as I told them repeatedly, that to establish any kind of a grant or a loan, there has to be collateral. Our collateral would be the word mandatory, not necessarily meaning that you're going to have to take to put it in, but meaning that you're going to have to say that you will put it in. There was no time limit on it, but to acquire this, you had to vote for it and say that we're going to do it. Well, it was mandatory, included each and every household to sign up. Well, at that particular time, cable TV was coming in. Rather than to sign up for $9 a month for water, they signed up for $18 a month for cable TV. Now, I can see no parallel in the thinking, none whatsoever. But of course, I might have been wrong, but I don't think so. And I became quite perturbed about it, and I have been perturbed for quite some time. Because all I'm looking at and looking for is for the betterment of the area. Now, it seems rather foolish and asinine for me to sit here and tell you that we are going to be a center for the surrounding area to supply the area with the things, the necessities of life. But it's true.
Yeah, sure.
Willacre is a municipality. Being a municipality, you can control the surrounding area that are living off in the county, so to speak. Some sector, some area, some municipality has to supply the surrounding area with the things that they need for everyday living, like a doctor, a drugstore, a store, filling station, restaurants. People from the surrounding areas come into here. Willacre is going to be a center. It has to supply the surrounding area. It's not very large, but it's common sense. So what do you do?
Yeah,
You think about it. And then you work the water. Hello?
I told him, I said, it's mandatory that you stop for this red light down here. It's mandatory.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, really.
Your sister said if you put those hot dogs in the bag, she'd come get them.
In the bag.
Well, you asked asked me about my purpose. I don't know if your wife was explaining to you, but the other thing that I'm really down here looking around for is people who could come to a festival and talk and demonstrate things. I talked to Robbie Scholl, who I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah, okay.
Knew him when he was born.
Probably so. I think he's going to be coming to demonstrate how to make a hoop net, talk about making crab traps, talk about what it's like to
be a commercial. He's a very good one, yeah.
Oh, he's just wonderful. I think he's just a real nice fellow.
He's a carpenter by trade.
Uh-huh.
And fishing, commercial fishing, is very hard. And sometimes what you have to do is supplement fishing, those that love it, with something else.
You don't catch fish sometimes.
Sometimes it goes on weeks and months and days that you don't catch anything. And so what you do is you have to have a trade. But people love it. They like to do it. They wouldn't have it any other way, and they grew up doing this.
Mm-hmm. Just like Charles Butler.
Wouldn't have anything else, wouldn't do anything else.
I talked to him the other day.
Yeah,
he's just a wonderful man.
Yeah, he's very interesting, and he has an excellent perception. Did you know that he has a record of every day that he's ever fished?
No, I didn't know that.
If Charles Butler had got a college education, we would all be in trouble.
He's a very shrewd,
very
intelligent.
Oh yeah,
very.
He has a mind that I would like to use in being a superintendent of construction or something. I could say, Butler, you take this and you build me such and such over there, and these are the plans. He'd throw the plans away and he'd go build it.
Yeah, he's great.
He's
a real good explainer, too. I asked him a lot of questions. I need to go back and ask him some more.
Well, you do that. He doesn't mind. He's out there working.
He's a nice fellow. I really would have loved to have someone like him come to the festival, but he said, no way. I think I almost could have taken his wife off. She seemed a little less shy about standing up in front of people.
Nita's not that shy.
I really enjoyed talking with her.
Yeah, and
she grew up on the river.
Yeah, that's why she would have been so good. I want to kind of mix things up, have people, black and white, and have some women who have worked on the river, too. I think they just stick together, so I may go back over there. But anyway, I'd be finding people like Robbie Scholl and were your stepfather 10 or 20 years younger, he would have been perfect.
Well,
to
he
take,
is.
But I know that
he's the type of person that.
He's just the
will
kind of person that
tell
would like,
stories and anecdotes and incidents that happened about when he was fishing. You know,
that's the kind of person we're looking for. Yeah.
But
he talked to the fish.
Oh, I just
And he would go up. They'd hear him. we hear a boat. We hear somebody paddling. All of a sudden, you'd hear Kari talking to the fish.
He was a character. He was an individual that, fact of the matter is, they're already laying down. You'll have to come back another
that's
day.
That's fine. I know that he would be unable to go to the festival, but I have a long list of questions about life on the river that I'd like to ask him that I think would help me with my
the life on the river
article.
Would be hard to get out of him unless you just are interested in incidents. And
that's fine.
Anecdotes.
That's just what I'm interested in.
He would speak of certain things that happened
that's the best
years
way
and
sometimes.
Years ago that, we went and raised this net.
you just have to sit there and let
you know,
go.
And he would ramble on about raising. He had to go back to get so-and-so to come help him. And he's if you've never heard it before, he's a very interesting storyteller. But of course, it's repetitious with me, and I've lived part of it, you know, and I know most of what he's talking about.
I'll be a good audience for him, so you can just lock me up over there with him being my tape recorder. Maybe on Friday, what do you think?
I think that'd be a good day.
Okay.
In the morning.
Maybe I'll try to make it over here about 10. I know older people sometimes in the morning.
Well, he can tell Carter that you're coming, and you bet that he will be ready.
Okay. That would just be...
He'll sit there and smoke his pipe and talk. And he's like all old people. They get into a pattern. Mm-hmm. Things are dead with a pattern.
Yeah.
He gets up at a certain time. They eat at a certain time. And if they deviate from it, of course, they get real perturbed.
What time does he usually have lunch?
Well, now, this is a thing called three meals a day.
Uh-huh.
He starts cooking at 9:30. Now, of course, he just finished breakfast. And he's got to have dinner ready by 12 o'clock or so. And then they go in and rest and lay down. Now,
after
he does dinner. Most of the cooking.
Yeah.
It's interesting to say. He's a very good cook.
He reads a lot.
Does he?
He does. He reads a lot.
And his eyes are still good. And then, of course, I've took him to the dentist here lately to get his teeth pulled. He's 92, I think.
Wow.
And he's had all of his teeth. I cut his hair yesterday. So, Bates, you'll be fascinated with the conversation that you get out of him.
Oh,
incidents
I will be.
That
has
occurred on the river. He gets to talking about the game wardens when they first started coming in here.
That's exactly the kind of information, first-person information. I'm
about the fishing on the river and how it changed radically when the people came in here to monkey fish and what brought it on and why. I don't think he realizes today why it happened and why it was such a popular thing.
Why do you think it was so popular?
Well, it was a way of life. It started off that people were having problems of building large amounts of nets to catch fish. And they found an easy way of doing it. Electricity would bring fish to the top of the water. And, of course, the intelligent ones found out that electricity would only affect catfish at a certain voltage.
Oh.
And it would not affect other fish.
Hmm.
So they used this at approximately 40 volts with no amperage to bring the fish up. And what produced 40 volts and no amperage was old-time telephone, one of these. So they use this exclusively. But it only started as one or two, and they turned it a crank, and they became motorized. It became boats became available then that would run fast, and it just kept on. Well, when, say, an individual like me would come here and catch 300 or 400 pounds of fish, $120 to $200 a night. A judge sitting up here would be making $20 a day.
Yeah.
The judge would say, "Well, he's making this. Why can't I?" And the judge would be out doing it. you see what I'm saying?
They did.
That it was 50, 100, 200 and 300 people a night fishing on this river with electrical apparatuses.
Oh,
now
is that in the '40s or the '30s?
That was in the '40s and fifties and sixties,
and
right on up until the '70s, the end of the '60s. About the '60s, it quit. There still goes on now, but very little of it. Well, what happened is everybody else was doing it, so everybody got into that. And when you've got all of these boats out here, they say, "Well, you caught the fish up." You didn't catch the fish up. You scared the fish out.
Would it stun them?
It would stun them. They come to the top of the water. But hell, a damn fish is smart. To a certain extent. He wouldn't come back to that same damn place that he got stunned. You would bring hundreds of fish up, but would only catch a few of them. Because they were so rapid when they come to the top of the water.
The
They're running
only people them. Really that griped about it was the tourists that come down here to fish. Now they really
And it wasn't affecting nothing but the catfish. Now, there was other devices that could catch brim and bass with higher voltage. The minute that you go to 120 volts and 3 amps or 4 amps, then you catch brim and bass.
Wow.
It's different. Different ways of fishing and different methods. But of course, no commercial fisherman did this. They had no use for the brim and bass.
Right, because it couldn't sell it commercially.
No, couldn't sell it commercially. So all they were interested in was catfish, and they would run 20 to 40 volts on one of these little generators and magnetas, and of course they would, some of them would make a good living at it. Yeah. I am not knocking it. It was an era that produced this type of thing, and the popularity of it became such that a lot of prominent people went into it, including law enforcement agencies. Mm-hmm. I don't say the agency, but individuals mm-hmm. of the agency would fish.
Yeah.
Because there was no regulatory system on it other than
was it illegal though?
It was illegal because it was against a rule and regulation set up by the Game Commission. Mm-hmm. And the Game Commission was sanctioned and set up by the state of Florida. So we're talking about a rule and regulation, not a law. Mm-hmm. But the minute that a rule and regulation is set up by the Game Commission, it automatically becomes a law without being voted on or set by Congress. And we're back to the same stage. It was a misdemeanor.
Yeah. Did many people get prosecuted?
Comparatively speaking, very few. Comparatively speaking. And of course, it died out by the simple reason that the public turned against it. The same ones that were doing it turned against it. The same people, because that they had
not enough money to quit fishing.
Well, not really. They got the idea that it was hurting the fishing, which it was in a sense. So they turned against it. Hmm. They were wanting to preserve the river or wanted to go back to what it was.
How did it get the name monkey fishing?
Well, you know the organ grinder, or in a mm-hmm. circus, the fella grind an organ and the little monkey collected money from the people with a little tin cup. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the way the guy was grinding this thing, and the fish would come to the top of the water, and a fella would pick it up with a net.
Just a scoop net?
With a dip net.
A dip net.
That dip net with a long handle on it. And they would dip up the fish. And, of course, sometimes you could make lots of money. Other times you didn't make money because at that time the game wardens started coming in the 50s.
Yeah.
Heavy. And the game wardens would be chasing you. They would be out on the river to keep you from doing this. It's like the law on the roads, on freeways and in town. They would station themselves at very places. And of course, when you cranked your boat up with your equipment in your boat to go fishing, illegally or legally or otherwise, the game warden was right there. And of course, the guy would run from it. And the chase was on. And the excitement,
it was
wild. It was
and
dangerous, I might add.
That was real common on the Tennessee River. They used to call it telephone and fish.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing.
Yeah,
but
it was catfish.
It was on all of the rivers, and it moved all over the states, and it finally came into the St. John's, and of course for 20 years it was very, very popular here. And of course, as I said, it died out, and it's good that it did die out, and we got away from that sort of thing. But there is stories being told today, and will continue to be told about incidents that occurred about the game wardens being thrown overboard, the law catching them.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you go ahead and tell her that you were one of the ones that thrown the game warden over, and she will hear about it. Don't you worry.
No, it's more, unless people talk about monkey fishing or telephone and fishing.
It is quite a story.
I bet it
back
is.
In,
I'm sure I will hear.
You will hear about it. It is nothing to be ashamed of. As I say, just the judges
it was a way
and the
of
lawyers
life.
And all got by with it. But then when you went before one of those judges, he was very lenient.
Yeah.
There was not any
$100 fine.
$100 fine. Mr. Mayhew.
At the moment, it reminds me of a story about this fella that was every morning he'd come in with a boatload of fish. And the game wardens knew he was doing something illegal, but they'd search his boat and he didn't have anything in it, and they didn't know what in the world how he was doing it. But every morning he'd come in with a boatload of fish. One day the game warden said, "Do you mind if I go with you? I want to see how you're catching all these fish." He said, "Of course not." He said, "You're welcome to come with me." He got out there and found a good place to fish. And pretty soon he reached down in the little box that he had on the boat where the steering compartment was at. Took out a stick of dynamite and lit it and threw it overboard. Game warden says, "My God, you're fishing illegal." He says, "You are under arrest." Fish come to the top of the water and he dipped them up according. The guy didn't say anything. He reached in there and got another stick of dynamite and lit it and handed it to the game warden. Game warden had no... had no alternative but to throw it overboard. Of course, he was doing the same thing the fellow had done.
That's great.
Are you going to fish or talk?
This is the guy fished, of course.
So,
but these...
dynamite
and fish has never been one of the things that happen around here. These people work in a cycle. They fish for crabs when the crabs are in. They... That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Back when we were kids, we didn't know anything about crab pots. But we knew that lobster pots would catch crabs.
Huh.
So one of the biggest things here was building crab pots out of slats.
Wooden slats.
And they set flat on the bottom and went all the way down. The crabs would go in it to eat the fish heads. You pull them up. Weighed a ton. And you would have to lift these suckers up for two or three crabs, usually large. And you had them on a long wire across the river. And it would kill you to raise 100 of these traps. You had to be physically fit.
Yeah.
No person my age would dare go out and do it. You had to be in your 20s. You had to be robust.
Yeah.
I mean robust, you had to be very well conditioned to get out and fish all the time. And the same thing applied to these nets. There's tricks to all trades, I should say. And raising nets and raising traps are tricks. And, of course, we didn't have the mechanism, the modernization of the mechanics to know that you could do this with mechanical means. We did it by hand. And making these crab traps was a vocation. Some people did it. And
I'd like to find somebody who was making those. You just mentioned Charlie Butler and Robbie Scholl. Can you think of anybody else I should talk to around here who's a commercial, has spent the part of their life commercial fishing?
I know hundreds of them have spent all of their life being commercial fishermen. But
isn't that all Mr. Reeder ever did?
He did nothing else but commercial
fish.
Yeah.
But he was
a teacher. Now and he didn't catch any fish. They had something to fall back on.
Yeah, that's good. I was thinking of people maybe who were I'd have a chance of being able to bring to the festival. People who are, Mr. Reeder can't talk very much. I was just thinking you might know
Frank Hogg, isn't he?
Frank Hogg, yeah, he's one.
He's still on the river.
He's on the river, been there ever since we were kids. He's about
64
or 5.
He lives
down in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else mentioned his name, I think. Now, he commercial fishes mostly catfish and crabs.
When the sport camps came in, Frank decided that the best thing for him to do was sell bait to these camps.
Mm-hmm.
And he became quite... financially independent, selling bait. And Frank Hogg's a very good one.
Is he a pretty good talker?
He's an excellent talker, if you can ever get used to him. He's mean. Obstinate.
I like him. He used to be 6'5".
Wow.
He was a huge man. But I always like
back when we were kids, he weighed about 250 and about 6'4" or 5".
And we come home on vacation one time and got down here to the red light. Well, he seen Frank Hogg coming, you know. So they both chickened each other. They run into each other, you know. And Frank jumped out, and these people around didn't know us or didn't know Frank. Eddie jumped out and said, "You SB, what are you out here hogging the road for?" You know, his name's Hogg.
Right.
Hogging, and the people said they're going to think they have a fight. But I like Frank. See, I knew his... He has two kids now that's with the police department.
Huh.
And two of them are dope peddlers.
That's all.
There,
but
there.
I knew when I was born, see, and it's
yeah.
just...
I met him for a long time.
I met Nita when she was about 11 years old. I knew
really?
See, when we got married, she was about 11. And she's always Butler's wife and one of my favorite.
Oh, she's people. Delightful.
And her sisters.
They grew up on the river. They're about the only women, the ones that you see skinny fish and stuff, never really fished on the river.
Yeah, but she did. She goes out with her husband.
She
now.
Monkey fish.
Yes,
before that, she hook net fish. Before that, she... Cat Line, she's a very pretty girl, but she's worked right alongside of her husband.
For the life that she has led, she is a beautiful woman for the life that she has led on that river.
Yeah. I guess Butler is.
It's a hard life to live, but I think she's still just as pretty.
Oh, yeah.
That family is the only family that has financially came out on top commercial fishing.
Mm.
And he did this with a reason. Every day he writes down how much he catches, how much he makes. He's got better records than any store that I know of.
That's amazing.
He can look back and you say, "Butler, how much fish did you catch on January the 30th, January the 30th, 1965? So just a minute. He'll go in there and to his records and look and tell you how many he caught, what the temperature of the weather was at that day. How much money he made that day.
That's really
fantastic, I think.
I have tried to talk him into computerizing. He said, "Well, my system works for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than any computer that I can get because I take the time to sit down and write down my daily catch, the date, the weather, the conditions of the river."
Does he write down where?
And where he caught them, when he caught them, how much he caught, how much they were paying for them, and the total for the day. How much he paid to have the help in skinning them, what his expenses was, and subtracted from that, and his total earnings.
You know, Marianne, that would be interesting to prove to how many nets he needed to catch all of these fish at that time and how
That's
many he
idea.
Needs now to catch.
Yes, several
fish.
People have told me that Doc Bennett up in he said, you know, when he was coming up, that just about anybody could make a living on the river. And he said, now to make a living, you've just really got to know.
You didn't starve. Doc Bennett is in 90s now. He's in his 90s.
Well, he's 87, I think.
Yeah. I knew him, and I know all of his boys. Mm-hmm. One of his sons worked with me in Panama.
Oh, really?
And he's a railroad engineer.
His
he's in
name's
San.
Doc.
His name is Doc, too.
And I met Jackie.
Yeah. And Jackie's one of the sons. I like Jackie.
Yeah. Jackie offered to take me out and let me watch him pull up his nets in the morning when it got warmer. He offered that, and the next day it went,
Jackie
routines.
Would, see, they fish in a certain section of the river.
Mm-hmm.
See, everybody has different sections.
Yeah.
Different families have different sections.
Yeah.
And the Bennetts fish up in that area and have been fishing for years in that particular area. And Butler has been fishing here for years, and he will continue to fish here for years.
They fished and enjoyed life.
You see, when the fish are running, they fish like the very devil, and then when they don't, they quit.
Yeah.
And Butler don't do that. Butler fishes the year round, and he does it systematically. he will take his money and put it in the bank. Others will go out and foolishly spend it. And Butler wasn't always this way. Even though he kept records, mm-hmm. and he made $150, he spent $100 for whiskey. And then he quit drinking. He drinks once in a while now, but he quit drinking. And he took that $100 and put it in the bank. Yeah. But today, by no means would you call him rich, but you would call him well off.
He's looking to
take
it when he gets...
Everything that he has is paid for. He's got his... right around $100,000 to $150,000 in the bank from commercial fishing.
That's great.
And been knowing nothing else about anything else. But he's did it with a day-to-day cataloged or system of keeping records of when, how much bait to use, what the cost does. He's did it with a system of a control,
mm-hmm.
which most commercial fishermen does not have the sense to do.
Yeah, sounds like it.
That's why I thought it would be interesting for her to find out, as I said, how many nets it took for him to catch that many fish in 65 and how many nets it takes now for him to catch the same amount of fish.
Well, he varies. Now that he's getting older, he's dropped his amount of nets that he uses. But because his demands are less, he has realized, and this is another thing that fascinates me about Butler and his operation, he's realized that age puts a clamp on some of the things that he would do ordinarily. He realizes that he can't go out there because of age and fish 150 nets.
Yeah.
He knows he's got to drop down, but he knows that his needs are not near as enough. Where it took 10 years ago $150 a week to for groceries, he knows he can get by with 50 now.
Yeah.
You know?
He can. Most people can.
Most people can't, but he can.
Now, how old is he?
Oh, he's 56, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he will be 56 because I'm 2 years, I think, older than Charles.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. He's 57. No. 57, the reason I say that, he's got 5 years, he wants to fish. He wants to quit at 62.
He will be 57.
Yeah. Because he told me that no more than a week ago, he said, I've got 5 years. He wants to know why I don't stop and rest and relax, and I just can't. I need to go. And my argument with him is that you're not going to quit fishing.
Just quit depending on it.
Quit depending on it.
Well, he's a wise man.
He's very, very intelligent. And if he was educated, he'd be a damn terrible critter to have around.
Wow.
Because he would be rich a long time ago.
Really?
But he is intelligent, shrewd, smart. The only thing he lacks is a college education.
Yeah. Well, he was real nice. He said I could come back over and take some pictures of him mending his nets and such and skinning catfish.
Well, I would like for you to do that. Butler would never go. Shoals would be an interesting one.
Yeah, I think he really is going to come for us. And he's such a good talker and has so many good, opinions. Whether you agree with him or not, he's real good.
He's
about
very opinionated, and
you will find that most of the commercial fishermen are very opinionated.
Well, that's fine. That makes for good discussion and lively talking. No, he's just perfect. I was also going to hunt up Tommy Noel.
Yeah, no, Tommy's fished all of his life.
Now, how old is he?
He's in his 30s.
Okay, I thought he was. He's the president of the
Fishermen's Association.
Okay. Is that the one we know?
You know
in
Tommy.
Pomona Park.
Did Wy come here?
No, that's another Knowles.
Wayne Knowles.
Wayne Knowles. He's a commercial fisherman that you might be interested in.
Wayne Knowles.
He lives in Fruitland.
Is he kin to Tommy Knowles?
Yeah.
Is that N-O-L-E-S?
K-N. I think it's K-N-O-W-L. It starts with a K, don't it?
K-N-O-L-E-S, I think.
Now, I saw an N-O-L-E-S in the phone book, a T-M Knowles in a...
Well, I don't know how you spell it, but this guy, Wayne, is a commercial fisherman.
Okay.
He lives at Fruitland. There's a Fruitland crossing up here.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Georgetown, and there's a little crossing. You turn left, and the first trailer on your left-hand side is where Wayne lives.
Okay. Oh, wait, now run that by me one more time.
Run that by her one more time.
That was, go down to a...
308B, uh-huh. Turn left. The first trailer on the left. I couldn't never find it in there. I was looking for it. It's, he okay. told me the spelling of his name again.
And Tommy Knowles, I need to look him up. Mm-hmm. And I hear he's a good talker and a friend of Robbie Shoals.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was just trying to come up with a... there's Billy Ruth.
No, I haven't heard that name.
Billy Ruth's been a fisherman for years, and he's...
No, he quit the railroad and...
And went back to fishing. His son, Robbie Ruth.
Now, how old is Billy Ruth?
Billy Ruth is my age, and Robbie Ruth is in his 30s.
And they live?
One of them lives right down here at...
Well, his wife works right down here at this Ethel Water.
Realty.
Oh.
And Wally Salata, he was a commercial fisherman for years. He's just turned into real estate.
That's Nita's sister.
Oh.
You know, I told you that they, Bobby, her name's Bobby Solano.
Yeah.
Wally Solano's wife is Nita's sister.
Bobby is Solano?
Yeah.
Solano. And that's...
Now, Wally is down there, and he's...
Wally's an interesting person to talk to.
Very. He was president of the council when I was mayor, and Butler was on it.
Really?
Okay.
And they're both very intelligent, and Wally is exceptionally intelligent. And, of course, he...
So, Wally is now in real estate?
Yeah.
Okay, but has fished most of his life.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All of his life. The only thing he knows just about it.
Well, okay. He knows real estate real good now.
Yeah. And is he a pretty good talker?
Oh,
yeah,
excellent.
Oh, yeah.
He's an intellectual. Mm-hmm. The type that will talk to you and think and give you
right.
good, precise answers on everything.
And then Bobby, she grew up with Nita,
yeah,
working
on the river,
river
yeah.
all the time. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's...
Now she's got her real estate license. See,
yeah.
The husband, Wally and Bobby and Iris work. The mm-hmm. daughter works.
Works with them. And then yeah. Billy, she married Billy Ruth. I mean, Robbie Ruth. And Billy Ruth is the father that works on the river, and he still
right.
fishes. And Robbie Ruth fishes right on.
Uh-huh. Well, Billy Ruth, that sounds...
He is down at Seville.
Oh, he is. Oh, I need to go down to Seville.
He is an interesting individual. I personally don't like him because I've known him for a good many years. And, you know, you developed a like or dislike of people that you're financially associated with, and Billy was all for herself, which is a very rare trait in commercial fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Now Jerry
yeah.
is Wayne Knowles. That's her name is Jerry. His wife's name's Jerry, and there is a Jerry Knowles in here in Georgetown.
That's it.
It's
N O L E S.
K N O W L E S.
Okay. Because I was looking up under N-O-L-E-S.
It's a Georgetown Road. Is that where they live?
Well, they moved from Georgetown Road.
Yeah,
over.
And her name is Jerry.
J-E-R-R-Y.
The old-timers in Georgetown and Fruitland, which you'll find very few, very, very few anymore,
mm-hmm.
are the ones that did fish on the river.
Yeah.
And did make their living. There was no other way.
Yeah, sure.
But... they'll all tell you the same thing. The fish is not here. We have to fish more nets. The pollution of the water. It'll be a repetitious thing.
Did you know a George Knowles, Eddie? He's in Crescent City. That's the only two Knowles in here. And I know his name is spelled with a K.
I don't know.
But
you're not sure about Tommy's name?
No. I don't.
Well, I can find him.
Yeah.
Because he's just in Pomona Park.
Yeah.
I was going to go ask the mayor.
Yeah.
I'm going down there to... see a fellow who works for the state, fishes with a pound net, Robert Smith.
Yeah, there's a few that fish pound nets. But you see, the regulatory system that is came out by the Game Commission, we can say that they did this for the betterment of mm-hmm. the state of Florida and for commercial fishermen. There will always be an argument of whether in reality it was for the betterment. Personally, I think the less regulations you have, the better off you will be in the long run. And that applies to all of our laws. Mm-hmm. Really, when you have regulations or laws, you're trying to control something that's getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. And it may be that some of these laws are made before they get out of hand, mm-hmm. and they've created a problem, but yet they stay on the books. You mm-hmm. follow me?
Yeah. Who else can you think of besides the Ruths and the...
Ruths, yeah. R-U-T-H, Solanas. Yeah. Hogs.
Hogs.
The ones that fish out there now that that are really
now,
commercial.
Bobby fish. Basford.
Bobby Basford is a good
one. He fishes. He's worked at the mill 20 years and he's still fishing.
He started fishing when he was a kid. He used to fish with me. Bobby Basford lives right here in Waleka.
Okay.
And that whiskey store, it's here.
The log cabin?
It's log cabin. Right on the other side of that is his yard with all the nets in it and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he works at the paper mill?
Mm-hmm. As a mechanic, but yet he's fished.
And his wife did fish, but now she don't. Shirley is her name.
Okay.
She had her own boat and all of them would go out.
Really?
Nets. Yeah. Shirley's fished.
Oh, I'd love to get the two of them. That would be great.
Her mm-hmm. feet. She had to have an operation on her feet, and Eddie went out with Bobby not too long ago because Shirley couldn't fish with him.
Wow.
Yeah,
I just think that's a real neat idea, that the partnership where the mm-hmm. man and wife go out on the river and have for such a long time. Yeah. I'd like to bring a couple who does that to the festival.
Well,
they're very religious too, and they would like to convey. I would believe that. That Wally, they like to be around people. They mm-hmm. like to talk to people.
Right.
I think that Bobby Basford would be.
Bobby Solano would, I'm sure.
Both of them are.
This couple, Bobby Basford and Shirley, they had I'll tell you this on the.
Excuse mm-hmm. me.
For a reason. They had two daughters. And that's all the children they had. About 10 years ago, this railroad coming in took Malacca. Mm-hmm. The older one, they had went to town. She went to town with a boyfriend, and the younger one wanted to go. Well, both their daughters got killed right at that road. Well, he got killed and the train hit him.
Oh, they just didn't see it? Or?
We don't know what happened. It just Cindy called us in the canal to tell us
terrible.
About both of them. And she couldn't have any more children.
So she's too old by then.
No, she's a younger. She's in her 40s.
Oh.
Yeah. In her 40s. Because Bobby's 50. And this turned them to religion.
You would think it would have to. You'd go insane.
And it.
Oh.
That's how they survived, you know, with it.
Well, I really respect them.
Yeah.
What a blow. Well, we're going to have gospel music at the festival, so maybe that'll be a lure.
They're not fanatics.
No.
But
I mean, this is a nice family festival. There's no drinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They get paid for coming and paid for
their time. Just give them one of those things and let them read it. And
well, that would be good. I'll go over and talk with them.
Yeah, they're
wonderful.
Nice. Well, as I say, I've known them for years and years, and knew when the girls was born.
Mm-hmm.
See, and but they're not fanatics with it. This is what makes them. And Wally and Bobby and Shirley and all, they were real good friends. So
course, this got them to think, and then it turned them. So, as I say, that was their survival.
Yeah. Well, I would really like to talk with them. I guess I've kept you all long enough. I just started listening to your husband, and I was...
I told you the topic.
Yeah. I should let you all go, but... I've enjoyed it. You've given me all sorts of good information and good names.
Well, I don't think I'll give you any information.